Now, this difference isn't statistically significant, so perhaps it's nothing to worry about. Nevertheless, a cynic might argue that the spin group did better in a difficult economy because it was a little better to begin with. 2. There might be a Hawthorne effect. This is a technical term for the artificial increase in results that you get when you pay attention to people. The name comes from the Hawthorne plant of Western Electric, where some of the early productivity studies were carried out in the late 1920s. In one of the Hawthorne experiments, researchers found that when they increased the intensity of the plant's lighting, productivity rose. But to their astonishment, productivity also rose when they decreased the lighting levels. Their conclusion was that you can get a short-term increase in productivity just by giving people attention. In the Motorola study, you could argue the productivity increase came from all the training attention that the spin group was receiving. It wouldn't matter whether we trained the group in the spin methods or in aerobic dancing. Productivity would have risen anyway because of the Hawthorne effect. I had a couple of standard answers prepared to counter any suggestion that the change was due to a Hawthorne effect. My first defense was that Hawthorne effects are much less common than most people suppose, and that when they do occur, they are short-term, usually lasting for a matter of days at the most. The Motorola study, which spanned a 9-month evaluation period, would almost certainly be free of any serious Hawthorne effect. My second defense was, who cares? The fact is that we've increased productivity. If it's a Hawthorne effect, then let's Hawthorne the whole sales force and get a 30% increase in sales from everybody. But my heart wasn't in either of these answers. The researcher in me badly wanted to know whether a Hawthorne effect existed and, if so, how much it had contributed to the productivity gain. A new evaluation test. Motorola was convinced enough by the study to adopt the spin methods worldwide. Being satisfied that the method worked, it saw no value in further attempts to disprove the link between spin and productivity. In fact, Motorola dismissed my concern as an example of that rather quaint eccentricity which the English show in times of stress. We needed a new client with enough doubt to justify another large-scale investigation. Salvation came in the form of a giant multinational business machines company who, like Motorola, wished to test spin for worldwide application. With only moderate difficulty, I persuaded the company to let me carry out the remaining two tests that would plug the gaps in the Motorola study. 1. Using a matched control group and 2. Measuring the Hawthorne effect. Before carrying out these tests, we went through the same methodology we had used in Motorola. I'll spare you the detailed findings, which were very similar to those in Motorola, except for these differences. Situation questions were 4% lower in successful calls. This is in line with our main research findings, which show that situation questions have a slightly negative effect on customers. As in Motorola, the problem implication and need payoff questions were all significantly higher in successful calls. So were the benefits. But unlike Motorola, where need payoff questions were the ones most strongly associated with success, the most powerful behavior in this study turned out to be implication questions. The behavioral changes brought about by the training were greater in this implementation than in Motorola. As Figure A13 shows, the problem implication and need payoff questions almost doubled, while the level of situation questions remained fairly constant. The benefits showed a particularly pleasing rise, from 1.1 per call to 3.4. This may not sound like much, but here's how I looked at it. The 55 people trained in the study were making an average of 16 sales call per week, which means that in an average week before the spin training, there were 968 benefits offered to customers. At the end of the study, in an average week, the same people were given 2,992 benefits. It would be surprising not to get a significant increase in sales from these 2,024 extra benefits. A matched control group. Our opportunity in this study to match the control group with the experimental group so that both groups started with the same order level allowed us to test one possible weakness in our Motorola results, that the reason for the increase could be because the spin group started from a higher point. Again, as in Motorola, we compare the performance of each group for a 3-month pre-period and a 3-month post-period. The control group showed a 20% fall in orders, while the spin group showed a 16% gain under the same unfavorable economic and competitive conditions. Figure A15, Changes in Productivity After Training, shows that from a common starting point, the orders per month of 55 spin group participants increased by an average of 16%, whereas the orders per month of 55 people in the control group fell by an average of 21%. This study was also carried out under unfavorable economic and competitive conditions, which accounts for the fall in the control group's orders. By having matched the initial order levels of the control and experimental groups, we could now confidently reject the idea that the reason for Motorola's 13% gain in orders was that the spin group had better salespeople to begin with. That explanation couldn't be true here, where the initial order levels of both groups were the same. Measuring the Hawthorne effect. The Hawthorne effect was harder to test. As far as we knew, nobody before us had ever tried to measure whether a Hawthorne element existed in sales training. As we thought about the problem, it became easy to see why we were the first. It's not hard to measure the impact of plant lighting on output, but how do you measure whether a sales productivity gain is due to the spin model or due simply to the fact that you've given attention to people by offering them training? The method we adopted was a little complex, but this was inevitable, given the difficulty of the issue we were trying to measure. Basically, the approach we used was this. 1. We reanalyzed the productivity results from our group of 55 people trained to use the spin approach. Each of these people had exactly the same number of hours of training, so all 55 had received a similar level of attention. All had, so to speak, an identical dose of the Hawthorne effect. 2. We divided our 55 people into two subgroups. In any group that's learning any skill, whether it's golf, a foreign language, or selling, some people naturally learn more than others. From having measured their behavior in calls, we identified the 27 people who were displaying the most use of the spin behaviors and put them in one subgroup, and in the other subgroup we put the other 28, whose use of the spin behaviors was lower. 3. We compared the sales results of the two subgroups. If their productivity gains had been due entirely to a Hawthorne effect, then both subgroups should have shown identical gains, because both had received the same amount of training and management attention. But if their productivity gains had resulted from using the spin model, then the subgroup showing the greatest learning of spin should have had a significantly higher productivity gain than the subgroup showing a poorer level of learning. 4. Finally, we compared the performance of both subgroups with a similar size control group of 52 untrained salespeople to make sure that the changes weren't caused by a market, product, or organizational effect. Once we decided on this methodology, we set about re-examining our data in an attempt to isolate the elusive Hawthorne effect. Our results are shown in Figure A16, which reveals that there was a Hawthorne effect at work, but that, as with most Hawthorne effects, its impact was short-lived. First, let's look at the performance of the subgroup of people higher on spin skills. In Figure A16, the results show an increase during the training period, when they were receiving the most attention. But more important, the results continue to improve after the training is over, when they are receiving no attention that might create a Hawthorne effect. In contrast, the results from the subgroup of people lower on spin skills show a dramatic improvement during the 4-month training period. However, as soon as the training attention is withdrawn, their results slip back to the original level. Here we have the Hawthorne effect, isolated for the first time in the field of sales performance. Finally, let's look at the control group. Selling the same products in the same difficult capital goods market, their performance shows a decrease both during and after the other group's training. So we can conclude that the improvement of the higher spin subgroup did not result from market, product, or organizational factors. Compared with the control group, even the performance of the lower spin subgroup looks good. Instead of showing a gradual decline, its people are at least holding their own. Final thoughts on evaluation. There are even more tests I'd like to carry out before I'll be totally satisfied that the ideas I've described in this book will significantly improve the results of major sales. It's a never-ending quest. When I was growing up in Borneo, there were no roads and all trips were by river. At any point of any journey, if you asked the boatman how much farther, you'd get the same reply. Sachu Tanjong Lagi, which means one more bend. Evaluation studies are like that. Just when you think you've all the proof you need, there's one more bend. We'll probably never get round that final bend, but I hope you'll agree that in our search for proof, Huthwaite has explored the river carefully. We've tried to take an objective and critical look at our own models and whether they work, and by doing so, we've become better researchers, designers, and trainers. Above all, we've been able to increase the practical effectiveness of our approach. Ironically, by going through these very academic-sounding testing routines, we've improved our understanding of what makes practical good sense, measured by its contribution to sales results. I wish more people in the training business could be persuaded to take a similar approach. It would be very satisfying to us if this book stimulated more research into effective selling. I'd like to think that eventually, through patient investigation and experiment, researchers will be able to take more of the mystery out of the major sale and make it as clearly understandable as any other business function. About the author, Neil Rackham is president and founder of Huthwaite Incorporated. His organization researches, consults, and gives seminars for over 200 leading sales organizations around the world, including Xerox, IBM, AT&T, Kodak, and Citicorp. His academic background is in research psychology. It was at the University of Sheffield, England, that he began his research into sales effectiveness that resulted in SPIN. He is the author of over 50 articles and several books, which have been translated into a total of 11 languages. Refer questions to Huthwaite Incorporated, Wheatland Manor, 15164 Berlin Turnpike, Purcellville, Virginia, 20132 USA, 540-882-3212 telephone, 540-822-9004 fax. Thank you for listening. This audiobook is copyrighted in 2014 in the name of McGraw-Hill Education and is based upon the book Spin Selling, Situation, Problem, Implication, Need, Payoff, copyrighted in 1988 in the name of McGraw-Hill, Inc. To purchase other McGraw-Hill professional audiobooks, please visit Amazon.com. To purchase other McGraw-Hill professional products, please visit our website at www.mhprofessional.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.